you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
I'm Ivan Cage, every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of a on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Hey everybody, it's Orgasmic Carmatic. I have female Satan and Wicked Pup with me today. Today's topic is a little bit inspired by a friend of mine whom I've taken it upon myself to dedicate, if you will, this episode to. Her name's Courtney Anna Colson. She was in a car accident on her way home on Sunday night, and she has been in the ICU since then. So you haven't seen much of me on Sin. That's why I haven't been readily available for anybody that's not in the state of Michigan or in the hospital. So I went to see her today, and they're taking out another tube out of her lung, which is really good news. We did receive some bad news that her spine might not be able to be fixed, and in that case, she'll remain paralyzed from the waist down. But we're hoping that that's not the case and that the surgery will go fine, but we can't figure that out till Monday. So we got that going on, so it's a little bit crazy. I think we have a troll or a caller. I'm afraid to even check. I'm in one of those moods, guys, where I kind of just don't even want to be like, okay. But I'm kind of curious, so let's see if it's an actual caller. Hello?
Hello?
Oh.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Wow, I didn't know, because I just tuned into your show. I've never called in before, and I'm just actually curious, because I couldn't actually hear on my computer anything, so I figured if I called in, I would hear what you were saying. I'm sorry, I'm not really sure even what the topic is. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I was just about to introduce the topic. The topic today is called The Toolbox of the Chaotic Mind. I am a chaoist, which means I work with various platforms of theology. And I wrote a forum post called Breaking Boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty long one that turned into a book. And it's about different things that I use that some people don't and why I find them useful. And the first one, the reason I brought up Courtney is the first one I wanted to cover is prayer. Which, in the right-hand path, prayer is seen as, you know, something that you do on a daily basis, and it's there to communicate with God
mm-hmm.
in the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Courtney and her family, they're very super religious, and they've relied on prayer a lot throughout this situation, and it kind of inspired me to talk about it because of the fact that there is an immense amount of power behind prayer in itself, whether you're right hand or you're a left hand passer. And a lot of people on the left hand path, they don't necessarily see prayer as something that is beneficial to them, because they link it with the Christian and right hand path, and they don't take the time to really think about the therapeutic benefits behind it. And this whole situation has shown that, you know, prayer does so much for anybody that uses it. Her entire family, it was therapeutic for them because they have support. They have something they can support themselves on through this situation. And I truly believe that it works because of the fact that it's been 5 days and she's progressed so well. And all of that, the outward pouring positive energy, whether they're reflecting it off of a deity or not, it's all going towards her. And the results really show.
I'm sorry, please forgive me if I'm not familiar with the terms. I'm sure you've defined these terms earlier in the show. Again, I just tuned in, but maybe just for my benefit, again, it may be somewhat redundant, but could you explain the terms right hand, left hand, pass? And I don't your friend Courtney. I don't know. Again, I'm sorry to pose this request to you.
Oh,
but,
no.
Yeah.
It's okay. What is your religious following, if I may ask?
Oh, I'm actually a Muslim. My name is Slahuddin.
Okay. All right. Right-hand path is usually what would be considered like white religions, like Christian or Wicca or
witches.
So they're like white light religions. Anybody that believes in like God or like creationalists and things like that, they're right hand path. A left hand pather would be more along the lines of a Satanist or a Kaoist, things of that nature.
It is defined different ways by different people. I've heard it. Left-hand path is internalized deity. RHP is externalized deity. I've heard one, the difference is receiving information through reading, and the other is receiving information through doing. It's really dependent on the person a lot of times how that's defined. But the base tends to be kind of submitting to an authority of some kind for the RHP and not doing that for the LHP.
Higher power and lower power.
Yeah, so to speak, yeah.
And your friend Courtney, she's ill, or?
She got into a really bad car accident, and she is at the ICU in the ER section right now. She's Christian, and her family is Christian. And it's kind of weird. It was weird at first, because I seem to be the only one of her friends that is not Christian. But, and they had the theological talk with me yesterday, and I just found it completely interesting. But they've relied very heavily upon prayer.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me, like, just how much relief they get from it. Whereas for me, the way I define prayer is very much is ritual-based. I think that all rituals are prayers. You know, whether they have words or they're just actions or anything of that matter. And I think that a lot of people's misconception with the word prayer is they think that you are asking someone else to take care of your issues, and I don't necessarily see it that way. I see it as the transference of energy, whether you're trying to take energy or you're trying to get rid of it. So even grounding, like when for pagans, when they ground, I really see that as a prayer, because you're trying to release your body of the toxins and access energy and stuff like that.
I like Tim and Hardcore's definition of prayer. He said he was just talking to God. He's not asking God for anything. He's just talking to God like he would talk to his wife. And I like that from an LHC perspective, because I was like, okay, so I could kind of, you know, equate prayer with talking to myself, sort of, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
yeah.
I could do that particular definition for a personal empowerment thing. And, you know, Tim's one of my favorites, so.
Yeah, Tim is pretty cool. And is probably one of the most decent Christians that I've come across. Aside from my father, but I think I'm biased when it comes to him. So, it's very interesting, because they don't ask me to pray for her, because they know that that's not something I really do. But it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people give enough credit to it. And
I would agree. There are certain things that are not touched by Satanists and LHPers in general. It's kind of like, no. That is completely outside of our range. And I personally don't particularly like that, because I don't like the magical structure at all that is typically thrown out in most satanic paradigms. I do tend to lean towards sort of creating my own because of that. And like, to me, I think that a lot of these things provide something very basic, you know, like prayer and stuff. They provide hope, and hope can be one of the most powerful things at all, especially in a very bad situation for yourself.
Oh, yeah. Because hope, I view very much as a self-defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the exact opposite of a person who is indifferent to something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I have a coworker who, when she found out about the accident, she was like, I don't know what everybody's, you know, freaking out about. She's going to be just fine. You know, it's denial. It's very much a protective unit that you use. And she's going to be fine. I'm not even going to freak out about it. I don't know what you guys are even worried about. Whereas other people are like, okay, we're going to cross our fingers, you know, and that's the only thing that they'll think about. That I know I haven't thought about anything all week, which is obvious because, you know, my shit's all over the place. But I think this is something that I really dislike about the left-hand path, is that a lot of people that are on it, they tend to take words and they use it in the context of another person's paradigm, and I don't see the freedom within that. I don't think that as a Satanist or as a Kaoist or as even, you know, as any other religion, you should not use a word out of your own context. And a lot of people argued with me when, because I wrote another forum post on prayer just itself, and then on the word faith, because I was word tripping for a while there. And a lot of people they got down on me because they're like, well, words have meaning, and you can't change that meaning. But the thing is, I'm not changing that meaning. I'm using it within my context. And in my context, well, you know, as a Kaoist, I can do what I want. So, but that to me, that was something that turned me off on Satanism, mm-hmm. actually, is the wordplay and the semantics and having to quote the dictionary every 5 minutes. Because I did that a lot, too, over at the 600 Club. So, things like faith and hope and prayer, those are like almost like dirty words to mm-hmm. somebody on the left-hand path.
Well, I think it also depends on the person. I have noticed that women do tend to cling to those kind of hopeful ideas and keep them. And I see a lot of men that will out now reject it. And then, you know, like Ophelia is a great example of that. She says basically nothing defines me. I'm not agnostic. I'm not deistic. I'm not atheistic. I'm something else, you know. And I do see a difference between men and women within that. Because, like, for me, it's more like I like hope and I like faith and I like love. You know, like I like it's something more than an emotional thing for me. Some of those things, and I do know that. Like that for me is how it fits within it. Is that I do recognize that I am basically mentally masturbating, but that's okay because I allow myself the freedom to do that. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, the thing with hope is something that I've also noticed is it hope, faith, prayer, all these things linked together in the ending response of your body is sending out positive energy, working mm-hmm. towards what you want to happen. And in the end, mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that. You know, the means that somebody gets to from point A to point B, to me, it doesn't matter what you do. If it gets you through, it gets you through. And, mm-hmm. you know, in an extreme situation, you will cling on to everything and anything to keep yourself from falling mm-hmm. off the side of the cliff. You know, and me, I have found myself the past week hoping and wishing and, you know, they say, mm-hmm. you know, fill your hand. What was the saying? It's like, fill your hand with hope on one and shit in the other and see which one, you know, weighs, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, like, it's undeniable, the support mm-hmm. and the positive energy. It does help. And it does help the people on the other end. So, you know, I have my forum post pulled up because I'm prepared today. my little toolbox. I'm so incredibly happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
I covered theism very mm-hmm. very 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 lightly because theism is something that you have to tread upon very lightly, especially in a satanic community. Because mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if you're a theistic Satanist or you're a theistic Christian, you're pretty much shit either way. Manic and Satanic. She mm-hmm. did a show which didn't work out very well because it ended up being two agnostics and a theist. But it was supposed to be a debate between an atheist, a theist, and an agnostic, or atheist, mm-hmm. theist, and agnostic, or something like that. And she's a theist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's one of those rare accepted theists.
That's because she doesn't really talk about it. That's really what that comes down to. She's accepted because she doesn't really talk about it, so nobody can smash her.
That was one of my reservations of putting this specific forum post up, is when I was writing it, I really thought that people were going to be like, you know, even Zach on occasion will ask me, hey, Org, do you still think you're a theist? Well, you know, some days, yeah, I do. When I was talking to Courtney's dad yesterday, I explained myself more as an agnostic,
mm-hmm.
just because I think that would, it was an easier way of explaining instead of having mm-hmm. to go into the details.
Mm-hmm.
I also noticed that most theists that don't come off as nut jobs, they're generally accepted. So that's a clue to all the theists out there. Don't act like a fucking weirdo, and we'll be all right.
Fine, you know how hard that is.
Yeah.
You know what? It's not hard for me, because I go in and out of theistic mindsets all the time. But then again, I guess maybe I'm just a special kind of person and I should shut up.
No. I have always said that when it comes to the ritual chamber, I am pretty much a theist, but when I close the door, I am not. I like mythology. I like goddesses. I like all that, so I still play with it. I mean, I think I'm actually in the forum post because I commented on that thread because of that. I was like, yep, because I do. I always have, and I probably always will. It's like I said before. I know it's imaginary, but it's not when I'm doing it. Does that make sense at all? It's not at that moment.
Yeah.
It is when I leave. It's like, you know, I try to lock my logic at the door as much as possible and not pick apart what I'm doing in order to let it be as empowering as possible, and then I go on about my day.
Right. It's very important that when you are in ritual, you don't break ritual, which means, mm-hmm. you know, if you go into it and this is what you're embodying, if you tell mm-hmm. your brain that it's not real, there's a very, very mm-hmm. good chance that it's just not going to work the way you want it to.
Well,
yeah,
exactly.
There's no
yeah.
point in both, like, there's an old Kalis joke. It's like, well, if these all are parts of our psychological mind, why do you go about it like this and call them gods? And it's really is like, well, it's not really going to be effective if you go out there and go, oh, hear me, part of my brain that I wish to convey with, you know. It doesn't have the same effect.
Well, exactly. And I'm a highly imaginative person, and I like using that skill. I've always said that I'm basically a highly imaginative toddler Satanist, for lack of a better term. I haven't been at it very long, you know, and I like using my imagination, you know. Like, I know I'm, you know, logically, but I try to cut that off as much as possible, and I can't actually do that. But, you know, I've always been a relatively illogical person in certain ways.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to bring this back up again. I cover the deities and external gods thing, and I try to bring it to a place where atheists would be able to understand where I'm coming from. I as an example, I use the employee-boss reference.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When I am at work, I am subservient to my boss to a certain
mm-hmm.
degree, because
mm-hmm.
he owns the bitch, and let's face it, I need my damn job, so I need to keep it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I state later on that I remove that position as soon as I clock out, because after that, we are nothing more than two equals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm not going to, like, cuss him out as soon as I clock out, but at the same time,
that.
It really, yeah, we know that, Pub. But at the same time, you know, it really draws that line there. I don't
mm-hmm.
do whatever he wants me to do unless he's paying me for it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's that real-life explanation, or even as simple as parent and child. You know, you
mm-hmm.
are my child, and this is what you're going to do because I told you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Of course, that doesn't always work, as I found out at 12:30 last night when my daughter woke me up screaming because she couldn't beat Lego Star Wars. But she was so mad. I can't use the Force. I hate the Force. What are you talking about, child? But
now,
I believe it's Silent Hill. They say at the end of the movie, she says, a mother is God in a child's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Or in The Crow, when he corners the junkie and goes, mother is the name of God in every child's lips.
Yep.
Yes. Very much.
Oh, yeah.
And, and that's another thing that you got to take into consideration. God, in the Christian sense, he is the creator of life. Women are the creator of life. In all technicalities, any woman that's ever bore a child is a God. A creationalist sense.
Yeah, you bring that to a Christian forum, they're not going to buy it.
Well, of course not.
No, I do use deities a little bit differently, because what I do is I always have one that I'm working on, and what I do is I like study their mythologies and everything, and then I find what characteristics of them I want to take, and then I literally trick my mind into thinking I am them. Yeah, this is actually what I do. That's how that process works. Yeah.
So you force yourself to be civil.
Yeah. Well,
I'm
no, not really. But yeah. It's
like
I know it's a part of
it.
My brain, so I try to get it to move in as close an alignment to what said deity would be if they were walking around in my body. And that's how I work with them, yeah. Which is rather strange.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's not completely strange to me, because I know how the feeling is. Ever since I was really young, I practiced mediation, which is another thing that is very one of those don't necessarily touch items when it comes to some people. It kind of the if you're dead, you're dead, and there's no such thing as the supernatural. Well, I totally believe in the supernatural, so you know that's just the way it is. And so it's like an out of body experience, and I think that's also extremely beneficial, to put yourself in the shoes of a specific deity or multiple deities. I have my own pantheon that I, enjoy working with, and even if it just comes down to, it's fucking fun to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And being able to, just because you can do it. And even building yourself from the ground up with personality traits that you've always wanted, and now you have a chance to do it, and so you go about, and then eventually it becomes a part of you. And that to me is just really interesting. But I don't like things to stay the same for very long. So
liar, you're a creature of habit.
Only, when it comes to coming over to your house. Yeah, right. So,
I do other things, too, to support that, which would probably come off as strange or new agey. Like, I always wear, whenever I'm working with Didi, and I do that outside the ritual chamber, too, I wear their colors exclusively when I'm working with them. And I have also now, I'm on my fourth dye job in accordance with this, where I've actually dyed my hair to match the color of the deity.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Who are you working with now?
See, I thought most deities were white, so I'm pretty sure. Never mind.
Yeah.
I just dyed my hair, too. Because the red was turning into, like, a straw color, and I didn't like it. So
yeah.
I just went out and dyed my hair black and called it good.
Yeah.
I was like,
I was working with Tiamat, I dyed my hair black. And that was actually that was a strange experience for me on a psychological level, because I looked exactly like my grandmother, who is, and I always have, but I never dye my hair that color, even though it's that color naturally. Because of that, I've been dyeing my hair since I was 11 so that I don't look like her, because she's kind of like my own family devil. So doing that actually was a really strange, it was strange to look in the mirror. It was like, this woman's always been considered so scary and awful in my family, and she's in the mirror every day when I, get up and look in the mirror.
man. I don't like mirrors. I try to avoid those at all costs. It's funny that Pop actually was like, he called me a liar about changing things up and how I'm addicted to routine, because routine is actually covered on here too. Man, I reread this before the show, and I'm like, damn, I talk too much. routine I covered, and I think that it's beneficial because even if it's one part of your life that stays the same, it means mm-hmm. you have some kind of solid foundation. I mentioned here that states of gnosis, for example, you mm-hmm. have to practice them to master them. I am mm-hmm. a true believer that there'll be one or two that you're extremely good at. You won't have to practice before your natural gnosis states. I have a couple mm-hmm. myself. You know, but the rest of them I'm not all that great with, and I tend to stray away from them when I should probably practice them more often, but I just don't feel like it.
mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important that everybody has a foundation, so really I don't think that it's a big deal if there are certain parts of my life that I'm stuck in that constant routine, because I need to have that stability with everything else. And you can't have chaos, or you can't have order without disorder. You mm-hmm. have to have a balance there. And if you're not balanced, then
you need to get a Molotov cocktail. That's what happens when you're not balanced.
Yeah, blowing something up.
Well, everything's too structured. You know, it's time to just burn something.
Yeah, that would be a really big problem for me, I think.
Because you're a pyro, we know, you wouldn't be able to stop.
No. it's a problem for me because I went from a stage of complete chaos to a stage of complete structure, and I still mm-hmm. haven't found a middle ground for that yet. So elements of that unbalancedness shows predominantly in my life in certain areas where I haven't found balance in yet, you know, namely going out. You know, I can stay in all day and night, but going out around large groups of people usually doesn't end very well in my favor, and it's because I really haven't found that balance between chaos and no chaos, and being able to just be on the straight and narrow. There's no gray area for me, and there's never really been a gray area for me. So it becomes an issue. And that, you know, it's very much a con of routine, is getting mm-hmm. too much into that routine. Whew. God, I talk too much.
No, I don't think so. No, my life is very structured, but I have kids, so it has to be. When you have four kids, everything has to be on a schedule. But we keep everything pretty loose, actually. I mean, my routine is actually pretty solid. It always has been. I have to have that, and basically because my childhood was so chaotic that, like, I need to know that things are going to happen at the same time, and I'm also a bit of a control freak, so I like to have as much control over what's going on as possible, so I like knowing when things
you know
are
what?
Going to happen.
I'm definitely in the same boat with you. I am I'm very much a control freak. I like to know when I'm leaving, when I'm coming back, where I'm going, you know, at all times. I don't really like... I'm not a big fan of the surprise.
mm-hmm.
Whereas Paul is completely different. He's almost like my complete opposite.
My life is chaotic, except when I'm at work or when you're around. Only because you do not like doing the things I like to do. And the things I like to do is just go out and see what's going
to
happen.
No,
am I
going to
be out till 6
like
in the morning?
Go out
or
and get drunk. That's it.
Or wind up in like a park in the middle of the night, lost on shrooms. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas me, I have my own little, you know, I have to
wake up, steal a car, start the day off.
No. I have to be in control of me. And when I'm out riding about with somebody else, I am no longer in control of me. Essentially, they are in control of me, and they are in control of what happens, and they are in control of when I get back to wherever I came from, you know, things like that.
Bullshit, you can walk.
Before I started taking the bus and stuff, I relied on people to give me rides and stuff like that, and I was a hell of a lot less happier than I am now, because I just literally felt trapped. And
you're a hell of a lot less motivated, too.
Well, yeah. I suppose you're right.
Well, now I will say that I need to be more like Wicked, because the times that I've had the most fun in my life has been when I actually did just let go and let, you know, insane stuff happen and kind of go with the flow and not try to control the situation. That's typically, you know, that's when I have the most fun. That's where my best stories come from, so to speak. It's where, like, you know, a bunch of stuff just happened, you know, and you're like, wow, how did all, you know, this was great, yeah. So,
what
do that. Won't work. Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
I have admitted that. I have admitted that I need to let go a little bit, and I need to stop being so uptight. But the fact of the matter is sometimes, most of the time, I'll go out with that mind state, and I won't do it.
And get pissed off at me at 2 in the morning when you want to leave, and I'm still drinking.
Hey, I wasn't pissed off at you because it was 2:00 in the morning or because you were still drinking. Well, I was pissed off about that. But I was pissed off about it because I had asked you to stop drinking so we could go home because I had to be at work in the morning.
Yeah, but I looked around. I didn't see you, so I just went and got another beer. I figured, yeah, she'll find me.
I told you I was leaving. But that's besides the point. Besides the point.
And
we
launched out too early that night. Everybody went to the nature reserve and got lost in the park. I'm like,
I
need to go get lost in the park.
That's what happens when you have your first shift out. You kind of have to bounce out at 2:00 in the morning. When you got to wake up in the morning to go anywhere. And that's something else too. I mean, there's a difference between... Obviously, we all know this. There's a difference between indulgence and compulsion.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, I think, has a different definition of what exactly indulgence is to their specific person. And mine doesn't match very well with some people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because of the fact that I lead a pretty sober lifestyle, so excess.
Read that as boring.
No, excess to me is when you start acting so completely stupid, and you can't control yourself. That is excess to me. I don't see any point behind that. I think it's more detrimental than it is anything, but.
Well, that's because of your personal experience with going way too overboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, well, okay.
Yes.
Well, part of
yes.
the reason I don't do it, the reason I don't do it is because I have experience with going overboard. The reason
you
I don't like
chaotic.
Being around
this
other people.
Used to get smashed by the river.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'd get the phone call. Like, where the fuck are you? I'm by the river. Like, what? How much have you had to drink? 2 fifths? What?
Well, now, I
still stand by that.
I define compulsion more as addiction or slavery than you know, anything else. I think that, you know, you can have somebody where it's an indulgence, and yeah, they drink a case of beer and it was pretty, but you know, then they don't drink for 6 months or something. You know, that's kind of a, see, to me, I always equate
like
that with addiction
who
or
can't,
slavery.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. a person who can't go into a bar without drinking or doesn't know how to stop drinking or can't limit
mm-hmm.
themselves. Somebody that goes in and like, okay, well, I'm going to chill and have a couple beers, that end up, you know, drinking 6, 7, or 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The
see,
people
that get super drunk
and decide that they're going to do puppets outside of the bar.
That's not me, by the way.
That to me sounds like fun, you know?
See, I was the one getting smoke from the guy who was going to jail in a couple of days. Well, my friends were getting the hash.
Well, I was more, I was more referring to New Year's Eve, but
yeah,
I think push comes to shove. There are just some things that you shouldn't indulge in. There are some things that I would think that would be worse than sodomy, but that's the point. I think that there are just some things that you shouldn't indulge in. I'm sorry that if you're going to do something that could instantly kill you, that's
mm-hmm.
stupid.
Is that why you
won't
go base jumping with me?
No, it's not. But, you know, people will do what they're going to do, and there's nothing you can do about it, and that's why you control your own actions, and this is why I do what I do, and I let other people do what they want to do, as long as they're not affecting my life. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? If you're going to be stupid, then be stupid away from me. Because I don't want to die because of somebody else's mistake, you know, and that's just how I see it. I think that if you can't control yourself, then you should not be around whatever substance it is that you can't control yourself, because self-control is, you know, for lack of a better term, extremely beneficial. If you don't have any self-control, then there's a very good chance that you're going to fall right into compulsion and use excuses
mm-hmm.
to validate your actions. And that is irresponsible and it's stupid. But that's my opinion, and everyone's opinion varies. So there's not much you can do for another person. So you just have to ride your own life out, I guess.
I do my best to stay away from things that I'm a big believer in physical health being part of all this, you know, LHP stuff. So I'm a big believer in don't be a slave to it. You know, you can put it down and walk away from it if you have to. It doesn't really matter what it is. And then in addition to that, is it gonna mess up your physical health? You know, is another big factor for me. And I do like strange things, because like the one real vice that I allow myself is smoking, mainly because I actually started smoking because I was pissed off about all the anti-smoking laws. That's actually why I started smoking, because, you know, I'm that much of a genius, you know. It's like, why did you get that?
I was about to say, that's a brilliant reason to pick up a cigarette.
Yeah, I didn't start smoking until I was 21 because of that, yeah. Anyway, I quit for long periods of time. I'm currently on a quitting cycle right now, and I'll quit for 2 months, and then I'll just start back up. Like, well, I'm back to doing this. But there's a backstory to that, which is that I worked in a gas station, and I worked through a lot of those changes in the laws, and just saw, you know, like where they went from, you know, on the floor to behind the counter to them raising the taxes. And it was all just, to me, it was so retarded. And I got all like, I don't know, I decided to protest. And yeah, yeah, my husband still makes fun of me. He's like, the first person I met that smoked in some kind of strange protest against outlawing cigarettes everywhere. I said, yeah, but that's why I do it.
Hey, if you don't stand for something, you fall for anything, right?
Yeah, well,
and female Satan stands for smoking.
Well, I remember when I was in high school, because I've been smoking since I was like 12. When I was in high school, $3 would not only, and this is a sign of the times, really, that's an old saying that, oh God. $3 would not only buy me a pack of cigarettes, but would supply the gas money to get to the gas station for whoever, one of my friends, were buying me cigarettes at the time. And now, you know.
Do you remember when a pack of top was like $1?
Mm-hmm.
God, I missed that.
Yeah. Well, when I started working at that gas station, I was 18, and cigarettes at Marlboro were $1.49 a pack. I remember this because the 25s were $1.89 a pack, and I got written up for mischarging for it. But, yeah, by the time I left, they were up to, like, $3.50. I was like, this is ridiculous, because I only worked there for, like, I don't know, maybe 4 years or 5 years. It wasn't that long at all. I was like, this is ridiculous, you know. Just, you know, the price went right up, and, like, everybody was like, oh, yeah, that's a good thing. I was like, this is not a good thing. This is a stupid thing. This is social engineering for taxes.
Right, and, you know, it's under the guise of, well, if we raise these prices so high, people will take to quitting instead of buying it. No, I really swore that if it went past $5, I would never, you know, I would end up quitting or whatever. I'd pay $7. I'd pay $7 a pack for cigarettes, and I haven't quit yet, so, you know. Obviously, there's going to be some people who take that route. I can't afford this. I'm not going to smoke anymore. And then there's going to be people like me, or Wicked, who smokes like a pack a day, who are just going to suck it up, just like the gas prices. You know, people have these misconceptions of these protests where nobody's going to go get gas. But I'll tell you what, maybe a handful of people in your area won't get gas on that day, but the people that do will certainly make up for you not getting gas that day. And people need gas.
Now,
why? Because they're fucking
crazy. My husband actually bought a tube injector for the cigarettes, and he rolls his own. And they look like actual cigarettes. And it's like, I don't know, I think his price is about $10 a carton right now with the tobacco and everything.
See, I used to do that too, but they changed the laws here to where now a bag of tobacco costs just as much as a carton of cigarettes.
Oh, nice. Yeah, no.
That was bullshit. Top used to be like $1. Now it's like five something. At that point, I'm just going to pay the extra fucking $1 and get a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, because it takes time and energy, and then you... You know, like he'll mess up the occasional one and have to start over and, you know, all that stuff. It cracks me up, though, because I was like, you are the world's cheapest person. When he was like, yep, I'm done with he said, I'm done paying high prices for cigarettes. I just quit. And I was like, so you're going to quit smoking, too? He was like, nope, I found a solution. And he starts pulling all this stuff out. I was like, I'm going to work for them instead. Oh, great. You have fun with that.
Yeah, that was working for me for a while. Like, I could get a bag of tobacco for, like, $5, and that'd be well over a carton of cigarettes. Now, it's just it's not worth it.
I had
one of those little machines.
Yeah. I was too lazy to do that. I just went out and bought it. I sucked it up. I don't smoke as much as Wicked does, so it's not, you know,
a huge deal.
I recently did give up, well, not recently, it's been a couple months now. I gave up, like, soda, and I gave up energy drinks.
Oh, Lord.
And it's really weird because there was a time period where I was drinking, like, 3 to 5 energy drinks a day.
Mm-hmm.
And But I sat down and I figured it out. The energy drink that I was getting was at least $3. It means you're spending $9 to $10 a day, 7 days a week. That's $280 a month I was spending on energy drinks and not even thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then top it off, cigarettes. That was like over a paycheck I was getting every 2 weeks, spending on cigarettes and energy drinks alone. And I was like, you know what? I gotta stop. And you know, my health.
Like water.
Are your headaches better since you quit doing that?
Yeah. You know, I haven't had. I had one headache. Couple days ago, but I really haven't been getting any.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
so. That's so it's really kind of like, okay, wow, I was misusing the caffeine, which was my addiction. I mm-hmm. when it comes to being addicted or being a slave to things or whatever, energy drinks were one of those things that I used to keep myself functioning on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm tired a hell of a lot more often than I used to be, but I realize that it's my body's natural response is when I'm tired, it's time to go to sleep. You know, it's not time to slam an energy drink and be like, okay, second wind. So it's all around a better thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I know last summer my big thing was drinking. I drank constantly. And, yeah, that stopped real quick. But,
I always attempt to develop healthy addictions, but it tends to not work out. I went through my whole exercise phase, and I tried to go through that physical training course, and then I broke my foot. I have a stress fracture in my foot. Yeah, I didn't get to finish the course, and I'm not going to get to make my goal for the Warrior Run in September, which has actually been fairly depressing, but kind of ironic because, like, I've never broken a bone before. So, like, you know, I don't know. So it's kind of like, there's a part of my brain that's like, this sucks, but I'm kind of a big girl because I actually broke a bone for once in my life and I didn't, you know, die from the pain or something. Well, I didn't even realize I had. I kept running on it, so I did more damage than I should have. So, yeah, I've actually had to stop doing that, which means that was like my thing. Like, you know, if I got stressed or something, I was like, well, I'm going to go for a walk real quick. Now I feel better. Now I can't do that anymore. So, it was a funny one because I didn't realize that my exercising was compulsive until I couldn't do it anymore, you know. Like, I woke up, it was about the second day, and I was like, I got to do something, I've got too much energy. I was like, I'm addicted to walking. Oh wow, I didn't even know that could happen, you know.
That's an interesting addiction right there is walking. I've actually tried to become quote unquote addicted to healthy things, and it doesn't work very well for me either. Like, the whole not drinking soda thing and stuff like that it only works for so long. I don't like Jones for a soda or anything, and I don't like Jones for an energy drink, but the routine that I had set every once in a while, I'll fall back into. I'm not going to lie, I probably had one or two. But, or I'll try to eat healthy, and then I'll have this really, really strong craving for french fries, and I just say, fuck it. So I've never been an extremely healthy. That reminds me of that the forum thread that someone decided to post about losing weight unconventionally. I was like, well,
I saw that they took it down before I could comment on it. I did actually have an had at least a partially unconventional approach outside of actually doing the work, but it was taken down before they ever, before I ever got the comment. I was actually a little pissed off about that because I think the biggest problem was the way the person was thinking, that they needed to really change their mind about what it is. The
which thread was this?
Help Me Lose Weight
One
Unconventional Methodology. Yeah.
That was funny.
I responded and I was like, how's unconventional for this? I eat junk food. I drink crap. But I'm active. That's mm-hmm. the thing. And I eat small meals. And these small meals are like, I don't know, I just got done eating a ho-ho. So, you know, they're not healthy meals either. And, you know,
does a ho-ho count as a meal?
To me, it does. It does. Don't make shut up.
I do, to a certain degree, understand what Lexi's saying. I just, you know, eat, like, cottage cheese and stuff instead of ho-ho. But the same principle, like when you said a fistful of salad, I was like, yeah, I do that, like 7 or 8 very small meals a day. And that's the thing is that, you know, that actually worked very well for me because I'm always eating now. Like you know, my husband will say, I think you eat more than I do. And I'm like, no, I eat more often. I just eat less at a time than you do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, my coworkers told
you,
me that every time they see me, I've got something in my hand and I'm always constantly eating. But the thing is, and I really am, I'm always constantly eating, but I'm only eating when I'm hungry for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm hungry, it doesn't take much to fill me up. So, yeah, when you say, is ho-ho really considered a meal? If I can eat a ho-ho and it fills me up for a couple of hours, then yes,
yep.
It counts as a mini meal. You know, and the most activity I really get is walking, which I do quite a bit of, and sex. So, you know, it's not like I'm doing a hardcore diet and exercise, because I'm really not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I eat spinach, but that doesn't mean I'm healthy, you know. And I think that was another really important part about that forum post that he missed out on, was the fact that just because you lose all that weight does not make you healthy. You can be thin and be completely out of shape.
And there are people that are overweight that are in better health than thin people. I mean, some thin people. It just depends, you know. Because that's what I was going to recommend, was actually go Google side effects of obesity. Okay, that's like splashing cold water in your face, because you're like, oh, good, I'm going to die when I'm 40 of a blood clot in my neck, you know, while after they've cut off my knees from, you know, muscular neuropathy from diabetes. Okay, I think I can, you know, put down the Cheetos for that. And then I went to the doctor and got a realistic health assessment of where I was at, and that helped, because I had some minor things, not very major things, like my blood pressure was slightly higher than it should be, but it was enough to let me know that I was on my way to those side effects
right.
if I kept doing the same thing, you know. And that was what I wanted to put in the post, was, you know, why don't you go look up and see what you're doing to yourself? That might change your mind on this.
I think what irritated me a little bit about the post was the fact that, simply put, they didn't want to put in the effort. There was no motivation, no ambition, no, you know, goal. I mean, even in the forum post, he didn't announce that he had tried anything. He just, you know, and a lot of people took that time to give him a good poke about, why don't you just go kill yourself, kind of thing. Not doing anything. That's exactly what he was doing, is killing himself.
And I didn't think that was pointed out. Yeah, I didn't think that was pointed out appropriately. If you are killing yourself, you're just doing it very, very, very slowly, you know, at this point.
Right.
And, you know, that's, you know, and, well, and the thing is that there's two different schools of thought that are so predominant with, you know, when thin people are looking at people that are in shape or are thin are looking at overweight people, it's either like, oh, they have no self-control or motivation or anything else. And I firmly believe it's like it's a mental thing, not a physical thing, especially at first. It's a mental, I can't, or you try things and they don't work. It's a lack of willpower. And, you know, society sets up a lot of easy excuses. You can have a thyroid problem, you know. It can be baby weight, you know, which was my biggest.
Right.
Oh, well, I've had 5 kids. I'm never going to be thin. I'm never going to be the weight I was in high school. That's okay. I can accept that. And then one day I was like, I can't accept this anymore. But I wound up really looking into what I was doing to myself, and it wound up becoming, you know, a very simple thing, which was, well, I don't want to do that to myself, so I have to fix this. And that to me is like, I blame doctors in a sense, because I think that doctors should look at their, you know, their fat patients and be like, look, you're fat. You keep eating like this, you're going to be dead in 10 years. Here, you know, this is the USDA recommendations for your daily calorie intake. You need to start following that, or you will get sick and die. Because in essence, that is what most people face, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen firsthand the things that obesity does to a person, and even my doctor, I haven't seen him in years, but I went through a rough patch after I had my daughter, and because I gained a lot of weight when I was pregnant with both of my kids. I gained like 50, 60 pounds. I was like, holy crap. And I haven't always been the weight that I am now. In fact, I was probably around 150 with both of my kids before I even got pregnant. So it was really depressing for me. And then I started losing weight, and my doctor poked his nose into my business and was like, well, I think you're trying not to be like certain family members and No, I don't think so. It's definitely a mental thing. And I think that once you give up, then nothing's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the back of your mind, you've already given up.
Yeah.
And
well,
unfortunately, a lot of people do that.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, though, it doesn't come off fast. And that's the thing is that, like, there's no instant results. It takes time. Because I remember, like, you know, when I first started doing it, I was hungry all the time and slightly miserable because I couldn't have snacks anymore. And I couldn't tell a difference. And, it was just basically like, I'm just going to keep doing this because eventually I will see a difference. And it was weird for me because the thing that I wound up causing, and what my doctor wound up explaining to me, because he was weighing me, he's like, you've lost 30 pounds, and I'm like, I have, is that, like, my mind, especially at first, still saw myself the same exact way I had been. It was like I wasn't processing that I was actually losing the weight. I was, you know, because you see yourself every day, so I wasn't noticing the changes until, like, my clothes started falling off, and my doctor was like, you've lost weight, and I was like, oh, well, I've lost a good amount of weight, and that just continued. But I did do my entire weight loss thing under the care of a physician because I didn't want to, I wanted to do it right, and I wanted to do it in a healthy way, you know, and I wanted to have that there from beginning to end because there can't be problems associated, especially when I first started. I was, you know, I'm about half the woman I used to be when I started doing this. I mean, literally, I weigh about half of what I did before, and that's a big change. You know, and that doesn't happen overnight. You know, and the other thing, too, though, is that I don't think that anybody understands the psychological ramifications then of losing the weight, which is, like, in my head, I was going to look like I did when I was 18. I don't know why, you know, but time happens, you know, age happens, you know, things move and shift and change, and, like, I wasn't prepared for that, and I wasn't prepared for the fact that, like, you know, if I said, yeah. And then the other thing was by the inverse, like, I didn't real, and I had a really bad habit, especially at first, of like, I dressed like a total slut because I hadn't worn that stuff in years. So, you know, like, yeah, I mean, like, my clothing just got very, very, very small for a while because I was so happy with what I had done. And almost, like, but it didn't really come from confidence. I'm not sure where it came from. Self-confidence in my appearance actually came later. You know, I mean, it's like I didn't even realize. I'd be like, someone would be like, you look good today. I'd be like, who are you talking to? You know, it's got to be that person behind me because it can't be me. Because I wasn't used to that, yeah. You know.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is 6:05. And I have to say something for this edition of the show. We certainly go over a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I am going to go ahead and end the show. And mm-hmm. next week's show is about mortality.
Mortality?
Yeah, I went on mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So just so you know and everybody else knows and, you know, we all know we're one big knowing family. I'm going to a dubstep festival. So, with that, I'm going to go ahead and end the show.
All right.
See you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?